Here are the WGXC headlines for Thursday, February 2nd. The funeral for Tyre Nichols was held on February 1st in Memphis, 3 weeks after he died following a brutal beating by police there after a traffic stop. The United States and the Philippines on February 2nd announced plans to expand America's military presence in the Southeast Asian nation with 4 more military bases as they seek to deter China's increasingly aggressive actions toward Taiwan and in the disputed South China Sea. On February 1st, NFL quarterback Tom Brady retired for the second time, at the age of 45, insisting this time it's, quote, for good, unquote. A lawyer for President Joe Biden said the FBI did not find any more classified documents when they searched his beach house. On the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives February 1st, Congressperson Pat Ryan called for Central Hudson's CEO to resign, as the utility is facing numerous consumer complaints about its billing practices. The New York Attorney General's office on February 1st notified a state Supreme Court justice that former Governor Andrew Cuomo will have private counsel paid for by the state in his defense of a lawsuit filed by a state police investigator who accused him of sexually harassing and inappropriately touching her. Governor Kathy Hochul unveiled her new budget proposal on February 1st. Her proposal does not raise taxes on the rich to fund programs for the poor, as some progressive legislators had hoped. A cold front is expected to drop temperatures locally below zero this weekend. The groundhog named Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow on February 2nd, purportedly predicting 6 more weeks of winter. Meanwhile, in New York City, a groundhog named Staten Island Chuck did not see his shadow, arguing for an early spring.
I'm Janitara Begum, and I work in Operation Unite, and you're tuned to 90.7 FM WGXC. ACRA.
On Friday, February 3rd, turn out or tune in to the Avalon Lounge in Catskill for performances from Sam Lizabeth from the band Gorilla Toss, collaborating with bassist Henry Fraser, drummer Jason Navazari, and vocalist and wordsmith Sato San. Also, Berkshire County Quartet Sound 4 open the show, and Hudson Valley's Jack Lizard performs at the end of the show at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Friday, February 3rd, it'll be on the radio from 8 to 10 p.m., but there'll be a web stream of the entire show at wgxc.org/listen, or you can go to the Avalon Lounge in Catskill and see the show in person or listen on wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This is a family that lost their son and their brother through an act of violence at the hands and the feet of people who had been charged with keeping them safe.
At the funeral service for 29-year-old Tyre Nichols, who was beaten by police officers in Memphis, Tennessee last month, Vice President Kamala Harris called on Congress to pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. Harris said the issue is non-negotiable and affirmed President Joe Biden would sign it. House GOP leaders took the first steps Wednesday to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas for what they called a failure in the handling of the situation at the southern border.
If these are his policies that he finds accord with, then he must be impeached because he is a public official who has lost public trust.
Arizona Representative Andy Biggs said he is filing the articles of impeachment because Mayorkas is, quote, an immediate, imminent threat to the United States of America. The Federal Reserve announced another 0.25% interest rate hike to address the ongoing battle with inflation. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell implied future hikes are likely, noting the Fed will need more evidence to confidently say inflation is on a sustained downward trend.
Despite elevated inflation, longer-term inflation expectations appear to remain well anchored.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy met with President Joe Biden to resolve a looming default on the national debt.
If you have a child and you give them a credit card and they spend that limit, you're responsible for paying that credit card. But the responsible thing, too, is going forward, not just raise the limit, but look at how you're spending.
McCarthy said his conversation with President Biden was good, but no promises or agreements were reached. The College Board has released its revised curriculum for an AP course of African American Studies, which some observers said downplays components that have drawn criticism from conservatives like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. At a Wednesday news conference, DeSantis said he is now eyeing critical race theory and diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at state universities.
We are also going to eliminate all DEI and CRT bureaucracies in the state of Florida. No funding, and that will wither on the vine.
Finally, federal investigators conducted a search of President Biden's vacation home in Rehoboth, Delaware, as part of the ongoing probe into the president's handling of classified materials. Investigations are underway surrounding documents found in the possession of Biden, former Vice President Mike Pence, and former President Donald Trump. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, February 2nd. Go to the WGXC Newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information about any of these stories. Michael Mayer reports for ABC News 10 that the U.S. Department of Labor has announced its Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, issued citations at 3 Amazon warehouses across the country, one of them located in Castleton in Rensselaer County. The company has been accused of failing to keep its workers safe. OSHA delivered hazard alert letters at each location and has proposed almost $47,000 in penalties for the violations found at the Castleton facility. The two other locations in Aurora, Colorado and Nampa, Idaho were also fined. OSHA investigators allege that Amazon exposed their warehouse workers to a high risk of low back injuries and other musculoskeletal disorders. Workers were deemed at risk based on how frequently employees must lift packages and other items, the heavy weight of the items handled by workers, the awkwardly twisting, bending, and extending movements needed to lift items, and the long hours required to complete assigned tasks. Quote, Amazon's operating methods are creating hazardous work conditions and processes leading to serious worker injuries, unquote, explained the Assistant Secretary for OSHA, Doug Parker. Quote, they need to take these injuries seriously and implement a company-wide strategy to protect their employees from these well-known and preventable hazards, unquote. Read more about this story at news10.com. Janet Gramza reports for the Buffalo News that a federal judge in New York has refused to lift an injunction barring the state from issuing retail cannabis licenses in western New York and 4 other regions statewide. U.S. District Judge Gary Sharp ruled on January 30th, upholding his November 11th injunction against the state's conditional dispensary program after a Michigan company complained it was discriminatory. The decision means the injunction will continue to stop the state from issuing dispensary licenses to applicants in the Finger Lakes, Central New York, Western New York, Mid-Hudson, and Brooklyn regions. Sharp issued the injunction last fall after Michigan-based Verisite New York 1 challenged the State Office of Cannabis Management's rule to give preference for dispensary licenses to state residents who had been convicted of a cannabis crime. Verisite is 51% owned by a person with a cannabis conviction in Michigan and no real connection to New York. But the company alleges that the OCM's rule violates a federal policy called the Dormant Commerce Clause, which prevents states from passing legislation designed to bar imports or exports of legal goods or to or from other states. Read the full story in the Buffalo News. Clarence Fanto reports for the Berkshire Eagle that Tanglewood has announced the lineup for its 2023 season, which starts June 22nd. This year, the Boston Symphony Orchestra celebrates its 85th season in Lenox, Massachusetts, with an 8-week schedule including music by 28 living composers and 48 musicians and artists making their debuts either with the orchestra or for the first time at its summer home. Led Zeppelin lead singer Robert Plant will make his Tanglewood debut alongside bluegrass country singer and violinist Alison Krauss under the Kusevsky Music Shed on July 2nd. They are touring the U.S. in support of their new release, Raising the Roof. The schedule also features multiple appearances by celebrities John Williams, Yo-Yo Ma, and James Taylor. The season will also see Anna Rakitina lead her final concert as BSO assistant conductor. The young musicians of the Tanglewood Music Center's Summer Academy will perform in the Shed and Ozawa Hall, and the Music Center's orchestra, conducted by Susanna Maliki, will be on stage for the traditional season-ending concert featuring Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. In addition to Plant and Krauss, performances in the popular artist series include NPR's popular quiz show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the Steve Miller Band, and Bruce Hornsby and the Noisemakers and Train. Tickets go on sale March 9th. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In the recent midterms, 3,700 political donors gave more than $100,000 to candidates, parties, or super PACs and accounted for, get this, $2.43 billion. What if there was a way to fund elections with small donors, not just big ones? As Seattle, Washington grew in recent decades, local corporations and real estate developers gained influence by bankrolling city council candidates. In 2015, city voters passed Honest Elections Seattle to publicly fund elections and put regular voters on the same footing with special interests. Each registered voter in the city is given four democracy vouchers worth $25 each. They can be donated to candidates running for mayor, city attorney, or city council. To qualify to receive the vouchers, a city council candidate must collect 400 donations of $10 to $250 and an equal number of signatures. Once qualified, candidates reach out to the public to collect their vouchers, convincing voters why they are the best candidate. The system costs about $8 per taxpayer. Studies show vouchers encourage ownership in their candidates and government and help reduce the outsized influence of local special interests. Voucher use has expanded with each subsequent election, particularly among underserved communities. We'll have more tomorrow on a different style of public funding, which just launched in New York State. Find articles and resources at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, February 2nd, Groundhog's Day, the day we celebrate Bill Murray and I try to predict the intentions of a rodent, loosely derived by insane yet profitable humans. And it looks like he will not see his shadow today. Having a slight tendency to be wrong and being wrong the last 2 years, we'll go with the odds and hope he is right this time. For the record, this is recorded 2 hours before game time. Local early morning temperatures range from 5 degrees over in Pittsfield, Mass. To 14 in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 33. Today is going to be relatively nice. Conditions will be sunny but frigid this morning and freezing this afternoon. A high of 37 happens at 4 p.m. Overnight, about half an inch of snow will fall in some places, and temperatures take a steady slide, hitting 12 by dawn. Tomorrow, it just gets worse as the mercury will show 6 degrees by dark. Wind gusts will start knocking down some branches and will likely cut off power to some places. Overnight, we take what will hopefully be the last polar plunge of the year, expected to hit negative 4 degrees by sunup on Saturday. Then the warm-up begins. 19 degrees by dark. Sunday, we hit 42. And, that's it. Winter is over. No rodent necessary. Sunset today will be at 4:56 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:03 a.m. Looking way up, we see things are still quiet. X-class flare chances bottomed out. A weak and unexpected CME did hit Earth last night, sparking some high-latitude auroras. Solar wind speed is currently 417 kilometers per second at 4.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 5 megahertz till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3.6, quiet. The current sunspot number is 89. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
That was the Ibibi sound machine with Electricity from 2022.
On February 1st, Governor Kathy Hochul outlined her budget proposal. Here is a short excerpt of what she had to say in Albany.
3 weeks ago today, I laid out a bold vision to make New York safer, more affordable, and more livable. I spoke of our accomplishments, the challenges we've met and overcome, and those that still remain for us to solve together. I described my desire to have the New York dream attainable for all who call this great state their home, but right now remains out of reach for far too many. I said we set the table for what should be one of the most prosperous times in our state's history. But if New Yorkers don't feel safe, they can't afford to buy a home, they can't pay their rent, the cost of everything keeps rising, then nothing we've done will make a difference. So today, we're here to talk about how we can help. Help more New Yorkers realize their dreams. So our agenda focuses on affordability, livability, safety, and includes groundbreaking proposals dealing with housing, mental health, childcare, public safety, and even a minimum wage increase during these difficult times. All this just to make it a little bit easier to be a family living here in New York. And I recall that 1 year ago, I presented my budget to an empty room. We were in the throes of the Omicron surge, the chaos that it created. And at the time, I reaffirmed my belief that as governor, my top priorities were to protect the safety, the health of New Yorkers, our people, but also to protect the health of our economy. And despite all the hardship and heartbreak we had faced during COVID and all the rebuilding that had to be done, that we worked together, the economic outlook at the time, 1 year ago, was actually very positive. We had unprecedented revenues coming to our state from Washington. We had Wall Street doing very well. We had tax receipts. The comptroller knows this. We were in a very different place 1 year ago. So working with the legislature, we use those funds to help our people and help our businesses recover from the pandemic. Investing in transformative priorities such as education, healthcare, childcare, we did all that. And also we said we had to protect the future health of our state's economy, the 10th largest economy in the world. And I knew at the time we could not count on the sun shining forever. When I took office, our reserves were a mere 4%, a dangerously low level for a state our size. That's why I reversed the course that our state was on and put aside a significant amount of money for a rainy day with a plan with the legislature to increase our reserves to at least 15%. By the end of fiscal year 2023, our reserves will total nearly $24 billion because of that discipline. And it's a good thing we did. It's a very good thing we did because 1 year later, the umbrellas are out. A majority of economists are predicting a recession. But the good news is we're prepared. It's also one of the reasons we will not be raising income taxes after we just expedited middle-class tax cuts a year ago. Because it's not a newsflash that New Yorkers already believe they pay too much. But the question right now, before all of us, is how do we move New York forward even in an uncertain environment, and get through these challenges? Once again, we're submitting a balanced budget for fiscal year 2024.
Next is 2023 new music from Algiers. With help from Sam Herring from Future Islands and Jay Matthews from Boy Harsher, this is the song called I Can't Stand It on 90.7 FM.
Of our love.
Publisher of the Columbia paper, taking over from Perry Teasdale, spoke on social media on Wednesday, February 1st. Here's a little bit of what Warren Dews said.
What's going on, everybody? How you doing? This is Warren Dews. I am the publisher of the Ravine News Herald, the Greenville Pioneer, the Upstater, and now the Columbia paper. I'm so excited to be working with that team in Ghent and whole Columbia County. Just doing a test right now to see if this Facebook Live is working. So it's working. So I'm so excited. We are excited about working with the Columbia paper. We're going to be doing some different things, but we're going to keep the paper the same. The stuff that Perry is doing and his team is doing is amazing. So we're not changing those things. We want to keep them going. We're just trying to add to it and keep the paper alive. So once again, my name is Warren Dews. You have any questions, you can call me. This will be different. I'm straight. You can find me. I'm not hiding. My number is 413-212-0130. That's 413-212-0130. I've been doing this, playing this game for 30 years. I'm enjoying this newspaper thing, this media thing, and I'm here to join this market. I live in the Berkshire, so I'm not far from you. You'll see me more in the market. I know the mayor of Hudson and different people in the community. So I'm excited. I'm excited to do some things in your market. So listen, y'all, more to come. You have any issues, any complaints, any problems, call me. I don't hide. I speak freely. I let you know what's going on, and I'm here. I'm here to stay. All right? Peace. Talk to you soon.
Next, let's listen to 2023 new music from Columbia County percussionist, composer, jazz musician, and more, Bobby Previtt. This is Dark Current Mariner 2. On the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Sten Spinello reports in the Berkshire Eagle that expanding broadband and passenger rail service are the top priorities this year for the four state lawmakers who represent Berkshire County. They also mention improving the foster care system and access to nurses and dentists in the Berkshires. State Representatives John Barnett III, William Smitty Pignatelli, and Tricia Farley Bovier, and State Senator Paul Mark represent the county in the state legislature. In addition, Mark wants to create a green, and I quote, bank, end quote, to fund environmentally friendly projects, and Barnett wants to foster a more business-friendly northern Berkshires. The county lost one representative seat in redistricting. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. H. Rose Schneider reports in the Times Union that dangerous wind chills of around minus 30 degrees are forecast this weekend in the area. Frostbite could occur in as little as 10 to 15 minutes in those temperatures, according to experts. The National Weather Service says an Arctic air mass will hit the region February 3rd and February 4th, leading to, and I quote, dangerously low wind chills of minus 25 to minus 50 degrees, end quote. A low of minus 10 degrees is forecast on February 3rd. But Michelle Main, a Weather Service meteorologist in Albany, said wind gusts of 25 to 35 miles an hour will make temperatures feel closer to minus 30 degrees. Main said, and I quote, "It's really the combination of these really cold temperatures behind the cold front and high winds," end quote. Besides frostbite, there's a danger of bursting water pipes and water main breaks this weekend. Main said, and I quote, "If you don't have to be outside, don't be outside," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Porcupine Soup reports that Catskill High School students Lily Gallagher, Mia Goetzman, Molly Oswald, and Madison Mudge will perform on Friday, February 4th at Carnegie Hall in New York City. The four were chosen for the Elite 2023 High School Honors Performance Series. Gallagher, Oswald, and Mudge perform with the treble choir, and Goetzman will perform with the mixed choir. They are members of the Catskill High School Concert Chorus, the Catskill High School Treboliers, and are in the school's drama club. They get to spend 5 days in New York City working with the arts professionals, including the performance. And you can read the full story at Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Thursday, February 2nd. And we begin each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Citgo in South Caro has gas at $3.49 a gallon. That's the lowest according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast for Thursday, February 2nd is a 27. That is considered low. The UV index is also considered low. It's a 2 on Thursday. It's sort of high, though, for the winter months. The water temperature in Albany in the Hudson River right now is 36.68 degrees. That's about a half degree warmer than average for the past 10 years. The National Weather Service in Albany has issued a wind chill warning that goes into effect at 6 a.m. February 3rd and lasts until noon on February 4th, as cold temperatures are expected to arrive in the region. On Thursday, it's expected to be sunny with a high of 33 and a wind from the southwest 5 to 10 miles per hour spinning local windmills. On Thursday night, there is a 40% chance of snow showers, mainly between 11 p.m. and 4 a.m., otherwise, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around just 5. Wind chill values on Thursday night could go as low as negative 7. There'll be a blustery southwest wind, 13 to 21 miles per hour, but wind gusts could get as high as 37 miles per hour. Friday, mostly sunny and cold is the forecast, with the temperature falling to 0 by 5 p.m. Wind chill values are expected to be as low as negative 24 during the day on Friday, with a blustery northwest wind 22 to 25 miles per hour with gusts as high as 44 miles per hour on Friday. Friday night doesn't get much better. It gets worse. Partly cloudy with a low around negative 8. The forecast temperature Friday night is negative 8. The wind chill values will go as low as negative 30. It should be windy with a northwest wind 21 to 26 miles per hour with gusts as high as 43 miles per hour on Friday night. Saturday should be mostly sunny with a high of just 15 degrees. There'll be a northwest wind, 8 to 16 miles per hour, from the southwest in the afternoon, and gusts could go as high as 26 miles per hour, with a low around 12 on Saturday night. It's going to get seriously cold, folks. Take serious precautions so your pipes don't burst and your pets don't freeze. This has been the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered community radio. All right, here is the breaking news you have been waiting for on Groundhog's Day. The groundhog named Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow on February 2nd, purportedly predicting six more weeks of winter. Meanwhile, in New York City, a groundhog named Staten Island Chuck did not see his shadow, arguing for an early spring.
From the 2023 album Speech Free, that was Negative Land with What is the Problem on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Yunus Jung, and today I'm talking to Megan. Welcome, Megan. Can you give us a brief introduction of yourself?
Hey, thanks so much for having me. So my name is Megan Hetfield. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a peer recovery support specialist, and I'm also someone who identifies as no longer having a chaotic relationship with substances. And I'm also someone who loves and attends and hosts harm reduction works meetings.
Starting off with your work on harm reduction works, HRW, what does harm reduction mean?
Yeah, so harm reduction is many things. It's a pragmatic strategy and evidence-based strategy for meeting people where they're at with their substance use, including alcohol. It can also be applied to things like self-harming and mental health and, disordered eating and all types of other things. But essentially, it's a way to meet people with compassion and find out what their goals are and meet them where they're at to see what they need to reach their own goals. So it's a self-determined approach as opposed to a punitive one where you're telling someone, you know, what's wrong with them and what they need to do to fix it. And, it's just a really beautiful philosophy too that centers humanity and compassion, dignity, and respect.
So specifically to drug usage, there is a stigma that comes along with it. How has this prevented quality care for users? And is there any connection in the film Love in the Time of Fentanyl that you would like to make?
Oh my gosh. You know, stigma is the biggest barrier for folks, for all types of issues, especially substance use. You know, it's the fact that it's a criminal justice issue and not a public health one in our country, and the historical roots of racist policies that continue today, you know, make it a highly stigmatized issue. You know, you can't see, but I'm wearing a shirt that says be nice to drug users. You know, this shirt gets lots of attention because we're not taught that. We're taught, you know, people whose drugs are bad, they're morally corrupt, they're lawbreakers, you know, there must be something wrong with them. And in fact, we should be treating them, you know, the complete opposite. You know, folks who use drugs are some of the most marginalized among us. And this film, Love in the Time of Fentanyl, you know, really captures that. It captures the spirit of people treating each other like human beings, you know, despite the fact that using substances might be an aspect of their lives. It is not everything to them. It is not everything they are. It's just a part of their lives. And unfortunately, it's the part of their lives that causes so much grief, you know, due to the criminalization, due to the stigmatization, due to the criminal justice involvement that people have, and they can't seem to break free of that. And the film really, really beautifully captures what happens when you move the stigma out of the way and just treat people like human beings.
So moving on from quality care, safe injection sites allow medical supervision for people who want to inject pre-obtained drugs. How does this type of medical aid support individuals in comparison to a detox-only method?
Yes, so the what you refer to as safe injection sites, which is what some people refer to them as, another name for them is overdose prevention sites, because essentially that's what they do. You know, they keep people alive with a really unstable drug supply. You know, fentanyl is a contaminant, a poison that is found in most illicit powdered or pill substances that are purchased, you know, illicitly outside of a doctor's office or pharmacy. And these centers, these overdose prevention centers, you know, center people's lives as the most important thing. You know, if you are not able to breathe and be alive, you're unable to complete something like an inpatient detox. So an inpatient detox or even an outpatient detox is a great strategy. It's a great, you know, evidence-based treatment for someone that wants to detox. But not everyone is ready for that. Right? There's many, many factors that would cause someone to not be ready to go through a detox. It can be really hard on the body, physically, mentally, emotionally. And some people don't have a safe environment to go home to after a detox. And maybe they've tried many times to detox off their substance of choice. But then when they leave, you know, they don't have the right environment to support their healing. You know, it takes many, many things for people to heal and get well, and it's different for everyone. You know, it's not a prescriptive thing. So, you know, the main difference is that the overdose prevention sites or safe injection sites in the film are a place where people can continue to be safe while they are deciding what they think is the best thing for them in regards to their drug use. And for some of them, they just don't want to stop, and they all have their own perfectly valid reasons.
Speaking of patients, when it comes to this type of sensitive care, how do patients themselves react to it? And adding on to physical care and talking about the emotional aspect of patients, how is their mental health being cared for both patients and the people who are helping them out?
So, you know, oftentimes the way we approach substance use treatment in our country is very siloed, right? So on one hand, you have mental health agencies and mental health treatment, and on the other side is the addiction, the substance use. And sometimes, like in a detox floor, for example, they'll be across the hall from each other, even though there's overlap for, you know, mental health and substance use are not exclusive aspects of a person, right? So there's a lot of separation between those two things. Both have a lot of stigma, right? We have a lot of stigma for people with mental health challenges, just like people who use drugs. And they're often treated as separate from one another. And much of the time, you can't simultaneously treat both things. And that's really hard for someone because it's impossible to separate for a lot of people their mental health challenges from their substance use. Many, many people are actually self-medicating for mental health challenges of all kinds. For people to go to treatment for their substance use, most, if not all, people also want to address their other issues, whether it be mental health or even physical health. So until we can come up with a comprehensive care system that allows people to treat their whole body and mind, as opposed to only taking a look at their substance use. Sometimes if people receive care for their mental health and physical health, they will naturally choose to use less substances or use in a less risky way.
Is there anything that you would like to add on to this conversation as a last note?
Yeah, I just want to shout out, you know, Harm Reduction Works. It's a really beautiful space that people can attend of all kinds online. And there are some in-person meetings throughout the country where you can be met, you know, right where you're at in your life, whether it's, you know, you want to abstain from all substances, whether you're looking to cut back on some and not others, whether you're just looking for some support and community. It's a space that people can come and, you know, be met where they're at with their own self-determined goals, you know, without the stigma, without the shame, without having to quote unquote, like hit rock bottom or anything like that. It's a very welcoming community. It's a safe place also for family and friends of people who are using substances. There are meetings that are specific for family and friends and loved ones and parents to get support and to learn more about harm reduction and how they can help the person they care about stay safer and ultimately stay alive. So it's a really beautiful space, and I'm really excited for people to learn about it.
Well, thank you, Megan, for joining me today. And for our listeners, if you want to learn more about what we've discussed, please check out hrh413.org and the recent film Love in the Time of Fentanyl.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Tell me that you want me. Say that you love me. Tusk. Just tell me that you want me. Tusk. Don't say that you love me.
Just.